happened in Milwaukee is that it hasn't been an intellectual exercise or a debate about the market. It's a debate about who should have power over education. And parents in America, in the democracy that we live in, want to have power over their education. And that's true of rich and poor, people that live in the suburbs or live in the city, Republicans, Democrats. When it gets down to their own children, they get serious. They're not going to be satisfied with a school that they think will not work for their child, a school where their child would be hurt or not be able to focus on their studies and become the successful person that parents, all parents, even defective parents, want their children to become. And so the movement in Milwaukee for school choice really did come from parents, not as a political ideological test. It wasn't just a way to score points. It was a way to solve some really significant problems that we had. One of the parents who was dissatisfied with MPS later on became a member of the legislature, Polly Williams, and that made a big difference. Here you had somebody who understood the situation from the standpoint of parents and had some power and was able to raise public awareness and organize parents, and starting out from a very small base of angered parents, spreading it through the community and raising the issue so persistently, never giving up, and convincing other elected officials, including myself. Originally, I opposed school choice when I was in the state assembly, and while I was in the state senate, Polly Williams finally converted me because I found myself mouthing arguments that I really couldn't believe, that I found were ridiculous. And many of the arguments against school choice, almost all of them, are based on the fear of people that are afraid of it for a variety of reasons and don't want to just come out and say what the real reason is. Choice opponents, by and large, are people who are afraid they won't be chosen. And that is an understandable thing. Last night in the Bronx, I attended a town hall meeting, and Rudy Giuliani made the point that the problem with opponents of choice is that their priority is employment security. He said, after everyone has their job, then we'll worry about the kids. And I want to say that job security is very important. Job security is something that shouldn't be taken lightly. If somebody's very wealthy and comes from a comfortable family and their parents were rich, you know, it's easy for them to make light of job security. My sister is a teacher in MPS who doesn't agree with me on this issue. I think I've moved her a few clicks, not being quite so much against it. But she values her job. She doesn't want to be laid off. She doesn't want to have to struggle and look for another place to work any more than anybody else would. So when people talk about public school teachers opposing school choice because all they care about is their job security, I don't think it's a good idea to mock that concern, because that is a concern that's a legitimate one. It just doesn't happen to be as important as the education of the children. And when you have a system that's set up for the security of the employees over any other consideration, that can be a real obstacle to higher quality. This morning, some of the speakers talked about the impact that monopoly has. I think Gary Johnson from New Mexico is exactly right. When you have a monopoly and they can take their customers for granted, you tend to somewhat lower quality and somewhat higher prices. And we see that phenomenon in the economy all the time, including some of the industries that hang around the Congress and spend more money on lobbying than they do on research and development, like Archer Daniels Midland. They spend all their time trying to make sure that we can't import sugar from other countries so that they can keep the sugar price high. And maybe that doesn't hurt us that much to have a slightly higher price of sugar, but and lower quality, but it certainly we can't afford it in K through 12 education. We need to have the highest quality we possibly can. Now, there are a lot of things you can say about school choice, and I don't want to try to say everything about it, and maybe we'll have some time for questions so we can get into whatever your particular interest is. But I do want to say, who benefits from school choice? Well, I think everybody that's here that supports school choice would say the children benefit from school choice. You have competition trying to attract their interest or their parents' interest. So that's pretty obvious, and the parents benefit from school choice. But there are other people that benefit from school choice. Cities benefit from school choice. In fact, cities are uniquely the settings where school choice would be, because cities are where there's enough people together to create markets where you can have multiple suppliers of goods and services and lots of consumers to buy them. Monopoly is not a good idea in a city, because the city is a place where you can have a really, really rich marketplace. And we see that with higher education in this country. It is the big cities where most of the great universities and colleges are. Not all of them, but most of them. Here in New York, you have Columbia and NYU and City College and about 40 other colleges and institutions of higher learning, and they're in the city. But when you get to K through 12 education in the United States, suddenly the city is thought of as the least desirable place to be. It can vary from city to city, but let's just take one of the cities in America that's had the most association with urban pathology, Detroit. They have school choice in Detroit. They've had it for a long time. If you have money and kids, you leave town. That's school choice that you'll never hear the critics of school vouchers complain about. They won't focus on that. But the poor are left behind. The resources of people that are middle class, upper middle class, and wealthy are gone. And the school system that's left behind is largely dominated by the poor. And that's school choice based on geography. You move to Macomb County or Oakland County, you get outside of Detroit, and you solve your problems that way. So we already have school choice in every major metropolitan area in this country, but it's school choice that doesn't work for cities and doesn't take advantage of the natural advantage that the city has with centrality of the marketplace, large density of population, diversity of population, and as it has with every other market. I mean, just think about it with restaurants. Compare the restaurant selections that you have in New York City with the restaurant selections that you would have if you were in Minot, North Dakota. I don't have anything against Minot, North Dakota, but there's not a lot of East Indian restaurants, for example. I'm sure there's none. But, you know, you get into the ACT and SAT scores for K through 12 education, and you're going to find North Dakota's right up there, Iowa, North Dakota. Those are the states that compete at the high end. But they don't in terms of universities. I mean no disrespect for North Dakota or North Dakota State, but they really don't compare favorably with NYU or Columbia or City College of New York in terms of the market demand to go to those places. And so you'd think New York being the biggest city with the most people living in the smallest square mile area, that this would be the best possible marketplace you could find for K through 12 education. But what's stopping that? Well, what's stopping it is that you have an overlay of a monopoly that basically forces people to use it. Or if they have money, they can go to a private academy or school, or they can leave town and go to Scarsdale or some other wealthy suburb where they can be assured that they'll only have children that are likely to be doctors' kids or wealthy in some way and less likely to have problems. That doesn't work very well for the city, and I would argue it doesn't work very well for the country because we're missing out on tremendous opportunities. Now, there are models that we can look at. There are places in the world we could look at. Most of the countries in Western Europe, Canada, all have school choice of one kind or another. In Canada, because of the desire of French Catholics to protect themselves, their culture and their religion from English domination, they insisted on having a public system that allowed the Catholic choice, and eventually Jews were able to get it. So if you live in Montreal or Toronto, you can go to Jewish school, Catholic school, or public school. And that's a form of school choice that developed. They probably didn't consciously think of it as school choice. And throughout Europe, there's variations on that theme, usually caused by religious desire for religious education. In Holland, they actually consciously created a school choice program, which they've had since 1924. They had a brief hiatus between 1940 and 45 when they were not allowed to have any choices. But they've had school choice right up to this day, and it's a Western democracy which is respected by everyone, and it's worked really well. But we don't even have to look overseas to see a model for school choice. And incidentally, before we stop looking overseas, it's impossible to find a model in the Western democracies that is as monopolized by public ownership of facilities as you have in the United States. There's nobody else that does it like we do it, and there's lots of reasons for it, which you could hear from historians about, Horace Mann and all the other people that helped us end up in the situation we're in today, the anti-clericism, the fear of immigrants and all these sorts of things that helped to create the monopoly situation that we have today. But it is possible to just look at the United States and see a system that works really well. It works all over the nation, and that, of course, is our system of public colleges and universities, religious colleges and universities, and private colleges and universities. I would argue, based on the example of our Pell Grants, GI Bill, and state tuition grants, the three sources of vouchers in higher education, that most states have some kind of tuition grant program to go along with the Pell Grants and the GI Bill. Based on that experience, I think we could predict that public K-12 schools can attract the positive attention of parents, that public colleges and universities thrive within the environment of Pell Grants, GI Bill, and state tuition grants. And so too could K-12 public schools. They can thrive if they were given the opportunity. They could thrive, of course, only to the extent that they serve the children and attract the positive attention of parents. Now, what has happened in Milwaukee? 10 years ago, because of the grassroots support that we had and also some assistance from people who did have ideological feelings, motives, the Bradley Foundation, which is clearly a conservative foundation, they were very helpful in terms of paying for private vouchers to go along with the very limited choice program that we had. This coalition came together, and finally, 10 years ago, we established what was a very limited choice program. You could have no more than 1,000 students at the beginning. It couldn't be for religious schools, and there were all kinds of strings attached to it. But nevertheless, it was way oversubscribed. We had to establish a private voucher program to go along with it. It has gradually grown, and 4 years ago, in a big breakthrough, we were able to get through the legislature and with the support of the governor, allowing choice to expand to the religious schools. Now, our reason for that wasn't because, at least in my case, it wasn't because I was trying to spread religion. I'm a Presbyterian, and not in the sense of a Presbyterian 100 years ago. I'm in the Presbyterian church that is so tolerant that we even allow people who believe in God to come to our services occasionally. I do not believe in creationism. I just refuse to believe that the earth was created 5,000 years ago, whatever it's supposed to be. I believe that God would be capable of having his own time schedule, his or her own time schedule, and that, that's a metaphorical thing, whatever the 7 days is. I don't believe in creationism, but I do believe that giving parents options to go to school where they want their children to go, where they think their children will learn how to read and their children will learn how to get the lessons that they need to improve their life and to succeed in this world and not fail. If parents want to send their kids to a Missouri Synod Lutheran school or a Wisconsin Synod Lutheran school, also some assistance from people who did have ideological feelings, motives, the Bradley Foundation, which is clearly a conservative foundation, they were very helpful in terms of paying for private vouchers to go along with the very limited choice program that we had. This coalition came together, and finally, 10 years ago, we established what was a very limited choice program. You could have no more than 1,000 students at the beginning. It couldn't be for religious schools, and there were all kinds of strings attached to it. But nevertheless, it was way oversubscribed. We had to establish a private voucher program to go along with it. It has gradually grown, and 4 years ago, in a big breakthrough, we were able to get through the legislature and with the support of the governor, allowing choice to expand to the religious schools. Now, our reason for that wasn't because, at least in my case, it wasn't because I was trying to spread religion. I'm a Presbyterian. And not in the sense of a Presbyterian 100 years ago. I'm in the Presbyterian church that is so tolerant that we even allow people who believe in God to come to our services occasionally. I do not believe in creationism. I just refuse to believe that the earth was created 5,000 years ago, whatever it's supposed to be. I believe that God would be capable of having his own time schedule, his or her own time schedule, and that, that's a metaphorical thing, whatever the 7 days is. I don't believe in creationism, but I do believe that giving parents options to go to school where they want their children to go, where they think their children will learn how to read and their children will learn how to get the lessons that they need to improve their life and to succeed in this world and not fail. If parents want to send their kids to a Missouri Synod Lutheran school or a Wisconsin Synod Lutheran school where they do teach creationism, if that's their decision and no one's forcing them to do it and they want to take their voucher just like you would if you were in the GI Bill or the Pell Grants, any of those other state tuition grant programs, and you can go to Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois, where they also believe in a very fundamentalistic form of Lutheranism. Or if you want to go to Yeshiva University here in New York, you can use the GI Bill to do that. You know, the violation of church and state by the definition of the critics of school choice happens all the time in higher education. But anyway, if a family in Milwaukee believes that their child should go to this Lutheran school that teaches creationism, that's okay with me. because at least they'll learn how to spell creationism. And if later on in life they go on to college and study science and they want to question what they learned about creationism and look at some other ideas, they'll be able to read about those ideas and discover that. And the thing that parents in Milwaukee's inner city and throughout the city, there are parents, you don't have to live in a particular part of the city to be eligible for school choice. What they want for their children is a good education, if that includes religion or a non-religious private school or the public school. That's their choice. And that's what drives it. And what has happened in Milwaukee is that parents' decisions now are very important. I'm sorry if I run a little bit over here, but I have to complete the thought. The situation that we had before school choice, I want to just give you an idea of what it looked like in terms of the public schools. The state aid amount for public schools has gone up steadily throughout the years. Right now it's at $5,600. And that's the school choice voucher amount, $5,600. So 10 years ago it would have been different, but let's say it was $3,000. The way the state of Wisconsin counts kids for school aid purposes, the third Friday of September was the day when they were counted. And in Milwaukee, let's say the school aid amount there was $3,000. On that day, a child was worth $3,000. And there was great effort made to get people to come. Ice cream, movies, all kinds of things to get people in the building so that they could be counted for school aid purposes. So on that day, on that Friday, they were worth $3,000. The following Monday, what is the child worth? Especially if it was a child with behavioral problems, learning problems of one kind or another, then maybe they're not worth anything. And that was a real problem for us. That was the attitude. More and more we were labeling children as learning disabled so they could get specialized aid, more aid, without having to really teach them. And the focus was all on the institution and the preservation of the institution, not on the parents. What has happened now is completely revolutionary. It's made a huge difference. The public schools are getting better. There's more Montessori schools, more language specialty schools, more schools that people want. There are schools that have wacky ideas that parents wouldn't choose. They're not being created. The schools that are being created are the ones that parents would want to choose. MPS, as Michael pointed out, over 50,000 of our families now use extended daycare. Now, that might sound... There's a crass sort of selfish reason why parents would want that. That way they can go to work, on their way to work, leave the child at school, and then come back and pick them up at the end of the day. They don't have to deal with daycare in between. But MPS is doing that because they want parents to choose MPS. So they're improving it in quality, improving it in convenience for parents, improving it all the way through. And the same thing is true with the religious schools and the private schools. They're not automatically perfect. Somebody was saying that Roman Catholic schools are better. There are great things about some Roman Catholic schools, but some of them need improvement. All of them need improvement if they want to continue to attract the interest of parents in Milwaukee. The equation has changed. It's no longer the system making all the judgments. Now it's the parents making judgments. Now, living in Milwaukee is a superior experience in some ways. Between the two voucher programs we have, one which doesn't have income limits, which I think Brent would appreciate when he comes up here, and all of the other innovations, including open enrollment, being able to live in the city, go to school in the suburbs, we have maximized choice and are continuing to push the boundaries of it as far as we possibly can so that Milwaukee has an advantage. Milwaukee is the best place to be if you want to educate your kids. Schools can now be part of the amenity package for living in Milwaukee. The amenity package, which gets sold so vigorously from suburb to suburb, this is a better suburb than that suburb, and the cities were never even part of the discussion. Now we can point out that we have programs that make Milwaukee a better place for educating your children. And so that has changed things, and we will continue to fight for that change. We would appreciate having more places in the United States, and I hope that eventually Cleveland's able to preserve their program, and I hope eventually that New York could see the benefit of this so that New York can be one of the best places for K-12 education in the country, be it public, private, or parochial. Thank you. Thank you.